give me some time to receive the message of being free.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NavaZoom room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And I am pleased to introduce Charmin T. From the 545 Happy Hour group at 8111. She's very active there. In fact, the first time I ever laid ears on Charmin, she was the discussion leader at her home group. And I was on my way to go see something that was, it was another group in Dunwoody at 8 o'clock. And I just stopped there on the way down. It was such an incredible meeting and everybody participated. And she was right there connected to everybody and everything. And then when it was all over, her husband came in and her two kids. Yeah. And it was it was an AA family, a totally happy family. Anyway, she accepted my invitation and she came and spoke, and that was about six years ago. Yeah, it's been a while. So, anyway, she did a great job that night, and I'm sure, she's gonna share, her brand of recovery with everybody, and, I'm glad everybody's here to accept the gift that she's willing to give. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Hey, everybody. My name is Charmin Talley, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Hey, everybody. I was just sitting here thinking as Tim was talking about how we met, and I thought, oh, my God. I was still such an angry alcoholic. I'm surprised anybody got anything out of what I had to say that night. But, you know, God is good and this program is good. And if you work the steps and you stay close, you don't have to be angry anymore. So I'm grateful. I'm really grateful today. And that's the thing that I allow to guide me in my recovery is always gratitude. And my sponsor has sort of hammered that into me over the years. And so anyway, my sobriety date is May the 4th, 1998, and I was blessed to find myself in jail in April of 1998 after a disastrous 10 years. I came from a very dysfunctional family. We loved each other dearly, but we were exceptionally dysfunctional. And at 13, my parents divorced and my first love broke up with me, and we moved away from my childhood home and my childhood friends. And so everything that I, you know, loved seemed shattered. And so it wasn't long before I was experimenting with drugs and alcohol. And so I bounced in and out of rehab, you know, countless times, at least five, ended up getting pulled over on 285, going 95 miles an hour in a 55 mile per hour zone by Cobb County's finest. And, you know, just 3 days before that, after 15 years of agony of using drugs and alcohol, I had curled up in the fetal position and just said, God, please help me. Just please help me, God. And little did I know that he was on the scene. And 3 days later, I was pulled over And fortunately for me, there was a warrant for my arrest. So that meant I had to go to jail. And so, I was very cooperative with the police officer. So he didn't charge me with a lot of the things that he could have. He simply handed me over to the city of Smyrna, which is where the warrant was. And I sat there for a couple of weeks, waiting for that moment of clarity. So, I was very fortunate to be sent to treatment, sent out of the state of Georgia to treatment. I did fine there. I was there for 5 months, and I went about the business of building my life in recovery and discovering a relationship with the God of my understanding. Well, fast forward a few years later, and I've now moved to Radford, Virginia, and I've accepted a job at St. Albans Psychiatric Hospital as a tech. And on my first day of work there, I met the IOP therapist there, and we got to talking, and she learned that I was in recovery, and for whatever reason, she thought that I might be a good candidate to complete my internship to get my counseling credential within their facility. So that's what I did. And so I was in Virginia for a couple of years. After the completion of my counseling credential, I moved back to Atlanta, where I had two small children who were devastated by my drug addiction. My daughter was 10 when I got sober, and my son was 7 when I got sober. And so I was anxious to get back to Atlanta to try to rebuild those relationships with my children, and that's exactly what I did. And so now I was about 5 years sober and started working at Northside Hospital. And oh, by the way, did I mention that over that 5 year period, I never worked a step. I never sponsored anybody. I never got a sponsor. I never did any of the stuff that they tell us to do, but I was blessed profoundly anyway. I did go to meetings periodically. I was connected, with folks in recovery. For Pete's sake, it was my livelihood, so I knew a lot of people in recovery. So at 5 years sober, as dry as I could be, I thought it might be a good idea to get a sponsor and actually work the steps. So I did that, and I had just had my third child. She would have been – I met my husband in the rooms and married him. And so I'd had a child. She was about 5 months old, and I did a fifth step with my sponsor. And I don't know if it was a combination of being postpartum. I had been in the program for 5 years. There was so much I don't know what it was, but I can tell you that I almost lost my mind. I kept waiting for that release that the book talks about. I kept waiting for this weight to be lifted off of me. I kept waiting for this miraculous thing to happen, and none of it happened. In fact, I spiraled into such a place that I wouldn't say I was suicidal, but I had to take a leave of absence from work, because what it did is it tapped into so much unresolved trauma and unfinished business with parents, and just, oh my gosh, it was endless, really. And so I hung on. I didn't drink. I took a 30-day leave of absence from work, and kind of pulled myself up by my bootstraps and really tried to immerse myself in the program, and things got better. Things got a lot better. I left my job at Northside at 5 years sober, and after the birth of my 9 years sober, after the birth of my fourth child, and started my own business. And it's interesting what I've learned of working in the field of behavioral health is that working with this population, it somehow made me feel or gave me this idea that, I worked with alcoholics all day. I'm an alcoholic. I don't need to go to those meetings anymore. The things that you always hear, when somebody's about to tell you that they went back out. So I had been sober now, or dry, for 12 years. This would have been 2009. I was starting to have problems in with my personal relationships. I was textbook dry drunk, and I was in a head-on collision when I was 8 months pregnant with my fourth child, in 2007, and I started having degenerative disc issues as a result. And so now here we are, 2009, 2010, I've opened my own recovery residence. I'm working with alcoholics every day. Somehow I've decided I'm immune. I don't need to go to meetings anymore. In fact, a dear friend of mine who had the courage to tell me the truth, when I would show up to meetings, he said, "Who's picking up a chip? Because that's the only time you show up to meetings anymore." And so that went on for a couple of years. The pain of that car accident got worse and worse. I started having really persistent neck and back issues. In 2010, I moved out of my family home. My husband and I separated. I had major neck and back surgery in December of 2010. And this cocaine and alcohol loving woman who had never used a pain pill in her life was prescribed lots of pain medication for a long period of time, and by March of 2011, I was in a full-blown relapse. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, they talk about the insanity of our disease, and I remember so vividly after almost 13 years of not drinking and not drugging, when I actually did pick up again, I remember thinking, it was a Thursday, and I remember thinking after drinking again after that period of time, I didn't get drunk, it didn't work, I didn't feel the effects of it, it was very bizarre, it was really weird, and so I remember thinking to myself, well, I'll just blow it out this weekend and go back to work on Monday. Like, the insanity was just so entrenched in my psyche that I actually believed that I was capable somehow of just putting it down and going back to work as if nothing had ever happened. And I look back on that now and realize that I'm shocked, frankly, it took as long as it did for me to finally put drugs and alcohol back in my body. That was in March of 2011. And the disease progressed very quickly, thankfully, mercifully, progressed very quickly. And I say that with absolute sincerity because it didn't take but about 5 months. And I had lost everything that I cared about again and was in jail again. So that's what I do. I'm the alcoholic that doesn't just go, "Oh, you know, I surrender. Things are awful. I'm going to go pick up a white chip." I have to be physically separated from the chemical, period. I can't have an option. I always have to go to jail. That's how I roll. And so I was very fortunate that, again, I was arrested on August the 18th, 2011. And so I sat in jail because my family, over that 13-year period, they got healthy, they got wise, they understood recovery, they knew the best thing for them to do was to leave me there. And so for 35 days, I sat in county jail. And while I was in jail, I remember waking up the first day that I was there thinking, you know, it's over. It's over. And the sense of relief of understanding that it was over is something that's very hard to describe. And so I surrendered to the fact that I was going to be there for a while. I met a young woman who was there, a three-time habitual offender, DUI. I got involved with the meetings that they had there in Cherokee County. And about a week or 10 days into my time there, it became very, you know, I say this all the time, is that when you're in a place like jail, the voice of God gets really loud. Because when I'm out here, there's so much clutter and distraction and buzz and noise. And you walk in a place like that, and the voice of God gets really loud. And so I surrendered about, you know, a few days in and said, all right, God, you know, do what you want to do with me. And before I left, the young woman that I mentioned and I were cellmates, and we had both done our fourth step. She had shared a fifth step, and I left ready to share my fifth step when I walked out of there. So, 1, 2, 3 was done in a jail cell on our knees. 4, we wrote, and 5, she shared with me, and I took my fourth step and couldn't wait to make a beeline to 8111 to find my sponsor, Harold Howard, and dump my fifth step. So that's exactly what I did. I got out. I called him and I said, are you going to be at the 5:45? And he said, of course. And so I grabbed him. Now, this young woman that had, you know, this stubborn woman that had waited 5 years to do her first fourth step knew better. And so by the time I got to Harold Howard, my fourth step was about 45 pages long and it was in a binder. And so I'll never forget sitting with him and him saying, all right, let's do this thing. And I pulled my fourth step out and set it down and opened it. And he said, oh, my God, is that your fourth step? And I said, yes. And he said, can you just pick the top 3? He knew we were going to be there all weekend long. But like a good sponsor, like the loving man that he was, we got through it. And I've never looked back. That was 9 years ago. And so I didn't hesitate. I didn't delay. I took my fifth step. I immediately contemplated 6 and 7. I made my list. And I've been about making my amends really ever since. And about, let's see, 2017, my sweet sponsor died, and his wife sponsors me now. And so I've stayed close to the rooms through a lot of things. My father died suddenly. My grandmother died 3 months later. My sponsor died 6 months later. A dear friend overdosed and died within that same time period. So within about a year, I lost a lot of people who were very near and dear to me. And never once did I think about picking up a drink. Not because I've got it this time, but because I'm so close. I'm so embedded in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so devoted to the things that I do, the people that I serve, the freedom that I receive as a result of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no comparison now. I don't think it's a chore. I remember all the years before thinking, you know, God, I don't want to go to those meetings. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be honest with somebody. I just wanted all the gifts of sobriety without doing the work. And so, you know, what I'm often reminded of is that saying, you know, be humble or you will get humbled. And this morning I was thinking about that. It's like, you know, yeah, be humble. Or you will be humbled and you will serve as an example of what not to do. And you know, the other thing that I always think about when I tell my story is when I came back, I immediately got in a book study. And I've never read any of the stories in the back. Who's going to do that? I didn't do that. But I did that. And in a third edition, a career officer, this was about, I guess I'd been back about 6 months, and oh boy, was I feeling sorry for myself. I had lost my business. My husband wouldn't talk to me. My kids were hurt and sad. My family was devastated. I had destroyed their trust. I could barely look myself in the mirror. And so I'm flipping through my book, and I come across this story, and I have nothing in common with the writer of The Career Officer except, of course, our disease and the following. He says at the end, see if I can remember it. He said, it has shown me through the tragic stories of so many alcoholics the utter futility of self-pity. It has shown me that success and failure are never final, and that neither matter in the final assessment of any man who has done his best. it has brought me back to a realization of my Maker and my duties to Him. And I think about that, and it put my relapse in perspective, because what it did is it leveled whatever my feelings were. And what it did is it set my mind and my eyes and my heart on the fact that mercifully I had been spared and given the opportunity to have not a second chance, but a third chance to build my life again, to have the dream of recovery, the freedom, the peace, the serenity that comes from being in true recovery, and to pay it forward. That was the other thing that, you know, you couldn't tell me anything. I worked with alcoholics every single day. That's what my program was. I was of service, right? Well, no, I wasn't of service. I was getting paid to do a job, and that's not the same as being of service from your heart. And so I never allow myself to get so busy with the stuff. And God has blessed me with the stuff again, you know, an amazing job. My children and I have, you know, our relationships are healed. They're mended. My husband and I are still married. You know, the sweet relationships with my mom, none of my relatives had to die while I was out there. You know, that was the worst, is that I was afraid my grandparents, who I adored, would die before I could get back. And they have died, but they died and I was sober. And those sweet and precious relationships that mean the world to me, I get to enjoy those today. And I get to enjoy those because of a loving God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had to laugh. I moved about a year ago, and I'm in the same neighborhood but a different house. And my house is the very first house at the entrance to my neighborhood. And my neighborhood is a popular cut through between East Cobb and Bishop Lake and over to Johnson Ferry Road. So it's like, you know, racetrack. And so every morning I'm sitting in my den, and I can hear the cars, you know, turning and going in and out and all this kind of stuff. And there's this one car. I know it sounds crazy, but like, I've gotten very familiar with when people leave, what kind of car they drive. I've gotten very familiar. And there is this person who has this little sports car. And every morning, about 7 a.m. for the last 9 months, when he leaves, he squeals his tires. I mean, loud. I mean, loud. And just bones out all the way down Bishop Lake Road. And it's so annoying, right? For 9 months, this man has done this. And I thought, I got to do something about this guy. Like, you know. And all of a sudden, it stopped. Like, he didn't, like, all of a sudden, he was gone. I never heard him anymore. I didn't see his car or anything. And I was like, oh! I prayed him out of here. I was so pleased with myself. And about 6 weeks ago, he's back. And so I hear him peeling out again. And every single morning, I hear that guy. And the only reason I'm sharing with you, I know it sounds crazy, the only reason I'm sharing that is because, to me, that's such sort of a metaphor for, like, my recovery. You know, when I first got sober, everything bothered me. Everything made me angry. Everything was frustrating. Everybody was annoying, you know, or whatever. Life was just so unfair. And I couldn't see the forest for the trees. And I believed that I was so powerful that, like, I could change all these outside things. And the minute that I started doing my own work, and the minute that I started doing what I was supposed to be doing to get myself free and stop worrying about what everybody else was doing, I got some peace. So I'm thinking, this guy has gone away. So when he came back, imagine my surprise. I'm hearing this guy squealing out again every day. I'm like, all right, God's obviously trying to tell me something. Well, it's never been about the guy squealing the tires, right? It's always been about what I tell myself about the guy squealing the tires. My perspective is everything. What I tell myself about myself and about my interactions with you and with this great big world we live in says everything about my spiritual fitness. And so I made a decision when he came back. I made a decision that I was going to make peace with this man. And so I have waited every morning excitedly for him to come and squeal out of here. And I always say a blessing over him. Or I laugh and say, oh, you're going to have to try a little harder tomorrow. That wasn't as loud as usual. You know, and it's what I tell myself about what I'm experiencing that makes all the difference in the world about how I view the life God's given me, how I view the life around me, how I view the world around me, and my responsibility to it. And my responsibility to the world has nothing to do with getting you to change you. It has everything to do with me being of service in whatever way God sees fit. And maybe it's just to say a silly little prayer for God that peels out in the morning, right? I don't know. But like when I look at my life through those lenses, through that glass, like life's magical. Life truly is magical. Like I don't have to let that silly stuff irritate me anymore. And when I live in that place, like I stay happy, joyous, and free. I really do. And so I'm so grateful. I used to be so profoundly embarrassed to share my story because I would have to say I went back out, right? And I definitely believe that your opinion of me was so super important that if I couldn't get on here and tell you that I had 23 years sober, that like that was going to mean I meant less to, you know, in your eyes somehow. And man, talk about having it all backwards. Talk about having it all backwards. You know, God's finally gotten through to me that what anybody ever wants from me is just to be authentic. It's just to be authentic, right? And so I'm a woman who went back to drugs and alcohol and who was mightily blessed and found her way back. And now I get to tell the story that it's okay if it happened to you too. Like, there's still hope, right? And so 9 years later, I have better quality sobriety and a passion for life and the people that I serve, the people that I love, than I ever would have had if I had not picked up and continued down that path. So for that, I am eternally grateful. And I really appreciate y'all being here with me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Charmin. And you had realized once things were getting going that I had been promoting you tonight, giving you a 2001 sobriety day. You gave me a little chat letting me know, well, actually, that in light of what you discussed and shared with us makes it even bigger in my mind.
Dude, that was a great story.
Very, very good story.
I enjoyed that.
Thank you. Excellent
a
job.
Good speaker, a good speaker ends on time. A great speaker ends early.
Amen.
Hey, Charmin, I don't know if you remember. This is Mike Boatwright.
Oh, I saw you logging on, and I was like, oh, my God.
So awesome to see you and hear your story. That is, I've got tears. That's just really cool. Awesome. I love you.
Thank you. Love you back.
Thank you, Charmin. That was great. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Ditto. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great story.
You somehow were able to fit 4 kids into that story as well. How did you ever have time for that?
Right?
Serious. Oh, I think that was me. I just said, you have some amazingly high energy.
Oh.
When you're not drinking and drugging.
Yes. You know, I did the perfectly alcoholic thing when I was 20 years old, and I thought if I got married and had a child, that would solve my alcoholism. And so that's what I did. I got married and had two kids, and I still was miserable and couldn't figure out what the problem was. No more kids. There will be no more kids. I'm going to tell my story.
Give me some time to receive the message of being free. Give me some time to breathe. It's not that I don't want to see. Understood your words to go ahead and forget my words.